Next case on our calendar is the matter of Garza versus T. Good morning, Council. Please come on up for the matter of Garza versus T.
Good morning.
Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals.
Thank you.
I invite you to please sit and get settled. While you are getting settled, I'll remind you that you will each have 15 minutes to present your argument. Counselor for appellant, you will also have 5 minutes for rebuttal, should you choose to use it. It's important that you state your name and identify the party you represent. You will notice that we have separate podiums for each person. We're still trying to keep a bit of distance in the courtroom to put people at ease. And while we do not require masking, people are certainly, you can certainly wear a mask if you prefer to do so. No problem that way. When you are ready, counsel for appellant, you may proceed.
Pleases the court. Mr. McGraw, I represent Miguel Garza, and we're the appellant in this matter.
And right. You are?
James Lofstrom, representing the
thank you.
The appellant in this matter. If I may.
You may.
Your Honor, with all due respect to the trial court, I knew this case was going to go sideways within 1 to 2, 3 minutes of our initial hearing, which was on December 14, 2021. And I have a couple of quotes from Judge Vuelo's statement when we started. The court had my own questions as to what is the best way to proceed with this motion. Of course, in my case, my experience, it's counsel, it's your motion, proceed. And then judge goes on to say, you both value your child's education very much. That is the core of this issue. And so the question becomes, how can we ensure that your daughter is in the best school that meets her needs, her social and emotional educational needs? Well, Your Honor, that's not correct either. The core issue was, did the parenting consultant, Sonia Larson, abuse her discretion when she made a decision regarding where the child, Jocelyn Josie, if I may, would attend school?
But ultimately, the district court did, in fact, make a statement on the issue of whether that parenting consultant did, in fact, abuse discretion.
Well, she made a statement. She relied upon her decision that it was not in the best interest that the child continue going to Burnsville School District, and that in and of itself was an abuse of discretion. I maintain that it wasn't in the child's best interest for the child to go to school in Woodbury for a number of reasons. But if I may continue here, she also says, this court believes that I need more information to continue with this motion. Well, she's going outside the record, Your Honor. The only information she needs was what was before her, okay? And that was whether...
But if the district court is entrusted in these kinds of cases with determining the best interests, and she... All she got, and the district court wanted were the actual notes and records from the psychologist, from the interview, et cetera. Why is that in any way inappropriate for the district court do when the district court is entrusted with determining the best interests of the child.
I
mean, not the best interests of either parent, although that obviously factors in.
Well, because the parties in June of 2019 decided what was in the best interest of their child. And so you have a child, you have the parents deciding what was in the best interest of their child. You have the presiding judge who accepted their agreement, Judge Barsher, accepting that agreement, indicating that, yes, that was in the best interest of the child. You have the custody evaluator, upon which the parties based their decision-making, deciding that was in the best interest of the child. And you have the...
But don't a child's interest changes? I mean, isn't that reflected by the parenting consultant order that the parties agreed to that, in fact, gave the parenting consultant the authority to make decisions regarding school attendance and activities and things like that? I mean, it reflects the fact that things change for children, don't they?
Not after 6 months. And if things change, then there should be a modification asking for a modification, a motion for modification asking for a change in the party's agreement.
But
that didn't happen.
It seems like the parenting consultant here didn't just say, wait a minute, you guys stipulated to Burnsville, I have no more authority. I mean, the parenting consultant even said, I need to analyze this now. We agreed that the parents agreed for the year, I can't remember if it's 2019-20 or 2021, whatever, that Burnsville, the fifth grade year, would be in Burnsville. But what do you rely on most strongly to say that that applied throughout the child's schooling?
Well, I rely upon the case law that says it's very important for the children, this child, to have stability and continuity. This child was started school in the Burnsville School District, and then when the party separated, mother moved to Shoreview, the child went to a school there, and then when she moved to Woodbury, she went to a school, the school in Woodbury, for 1 year, 1 year. Then when they entered into this agreement, both deciding that it was in the child's best interest for the child to continue going to school in Burnsville, the child went to Burnsville and spent her last 2 years in Burnsville. So she's been in the Burnsville School District 5 out of the 7 years of her education. And there's a sub-issue to this parenting time consultant's decision. I initially wrote her saying, you don't have authority in this because the parenting consultant order says, it said school things, but that's presumed that the parties had not already decided what school the child should go to. It said you have authority to decide things that were not discussed and decided on at the trial, at the by agreement. And that was decided on, the decision for the child to go to school in Burnsville, continuing to go to school in Burnsville, was decided on by the parties. So the PC didn't really have any authority, but what was I going to do at that point? I pointed it out to the PC, but she went ahead with the decision-making anyway. And as it turns out, she made the correct decision, a very, very thorough decision. It consists of 7 pages. She consulted with the therapist. She reviewed all the records, and she submitted a seven-page proposal. Surely that's not an abuse of discretion when it doesn't defy any logic or common sense. It certainly was logical. It certainly was common sense for her decision for the child to continue going to school in Burnsville. And that is the issue. That was the issue before the trial court judge.
Right, and just... So I'm clear in my mind. The decision we are reviewing is the district court's decision, not the parenting consultant's decision.
That's correct.
Correct. Okay.
But the issue before the judge, the trial court, is did the PC abuse her discretion? That's the only issue. Not about her education. Not about her education.
So is it your position that if the district court through its assessment of the child's best interest, said, you know, based on this record, based on the best interest factors, I conclude that the parenting consultant abused her discretion. What was the district's course? Do you suggest the district court should at that point have remanded it? Or are you suggesting the district court was unable to make its own decision about what was in the child's best interest vis-a-vis school placement?
Well, the court certainly didn't have any law support in it. The two non-presidential cases that she cited, which I consider a weak argument to begin with because they're not published, but nevertheless, those two cases talked about the best interest of the child regarding school, what school they would go to, because the parties had never decided for themselves what was best for the child. Your Honor, you got to rely, I got to maintain that, Your Honors, that you have to rely upon what the parties thought was best for the child. Why is it for the trial court now to decide something differently? Particularly.
Well, okay, then I'm back again to the stipulation your client signed and the district court ordered, and that is that the parenting consultant had specific authority to decide school attendance issues.
Well, again, Your Honor, I apologize for repeating myself. One could argue that she did not have authority to make that decision because that issue, where the child goes to school, was contemplated by the parties initially per their agreement, per the judgment on the custody and parenting time.
Is there any better record? The only thing I could find in the record is the transcript that was provided in the addendum of the stipulation. And that says she'll attend William Byrne in fifth grade, that's in the Burnsville district, and the parties will have to select a middle school for her in sixth grade.
Well,
and then it goes on to say, and she has a desire to pursue STEM, so they might choose a specialty school, but that's an open question at this point. So is there any better record for us to look at what, since it seems like you're placing a lot of emphasis on what the parties agreed.
And I say in response, why not? Isn't that where the emphasis should be? Parents deciding
but
what's best for
their
child?
But where is that? Is there any better evidence of what the agreement was than this transcript? That's all I'm asking.
But the judgment and decree, the transcript, the original transcript of June 2019, which was read into the record, and we got a copy of the record. And that's where it says that both parties agree, especially said that while she thinks that the Woodbury School District is better for the child, a better curriculum, she wanted to stop this because she wanted to stop the arguments between parents, which is a laudable reason. And she says, I agree that the child should go to Burnsville School District. And she says, I believe it's in the child's best interest. And her attorney in the transcript says, are you sure? No. And she says, yes, I agree that the child should go to school.
Isn't it open to decide middle school and beyond? I mean, that's where I'm having my problem. Is where is it that she will stay in Burnsville throughout her entire, you know, through 12th grade?
Well, doesn't it make sense? And all children, they're in a school district. They go from the elementary level, and then the next movement is into the middle school. The next movement is into the high school.
Yeah. Okay. So you're saying the assumption was, or that we should assume that Burnsville was the choice then?
I think it's more than an assumption, Your Honor. I mean, if the parties agreed that the child should go to school in Burnsville.
Okay. All right. Okay. You can continue on.
Yeah, I'm interested in hearing. Let's put that first issue aside and get to the district court's assessment of the best interests and what the best interests indicate with respect to where the child should go to school. To what extent do you believe that, or can you explain to me how the district court abused its discretion in that analysis and decision about what the best interests support?
I'm not going to be kind to the trial court here, but because I firmly believe, and if I'm allowed to point out, I firmly believe that this judge made a decision and then tried to support it with findings. As I told you, this hearing I knew was going sideways the moment I heard what the judge had to say in the very beginning. And she also says, it is also very clear to this court that your daughter is experiencing anxiety and stress as a result of both of your doing. Not just the father's, not just the mother's, but both of you who are causing her additional stress she doesn't need. Why is she chastising my client? They reached an agreement in July of 2019. Ms. T knocks on the PC's door in January, 6 months later. She's the one who interrupted the stability and continuity of this child. What kind of a, why make that kind of a statement chastising my client who had nothing to do with it? He had an agreement with his the mother of his child. But, you know, given how this thing opened up and the questions the judge asked and the comments the judge made, I'll be honest with you, it came as no surprise. It came as no surprise that she was going to rule against the PC, rule against the evaluator's recommendation, rule against Judge Barsher's decision, and rule against what the parties themselves agreed to without anything intervening. Obviously, if let's say, for example, my client committed a crime it was such that he should no longer have custody of his child, that's something intervening. There's nothing intervening here that should change what the parties agreed to.
All right. And on that point, your time has expired, and you'll be able to pick up on your rebuttal argument.
Other than just a reply?
Yeah, you'll have a rebuttal argument opportunity. Counsel for respondent.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Bo McGraw. I represent respondent in this appeal. Thank you for allowing us to appear in person. This is a nice treat today. I'm going to start where counsel ended up. He talked about the court asked him. Let's talk a little bit about whether or not the court established that it was in the child's best interest to make this school decision. And then counsel asserted that it wasn't, and he got into the process, and he seemed to have been troubled by the process. So I want to clear some of that up if I can. And I know the court has the benefit of having read the transcript. We showed up there on December 14, and we were ready to make a Zoom argument. Counsel was there. Our clients were there. And the court said, I'm going to let you know I read your materials. I understand this is a really important issue, but I'm concerned that I don't have enough information. I'm concerned that I haven't spent the time to go all the way through the Fleming report. That was a really exhaustive report. I understand Mr. Fleming is an authoritative figure in this space. I need some time to spend on the Fleming report. She also said that I understand, based upon the pleadings, that the child did a brief focus assessment with one Gail Rosenthal, and I haven't seen any notes or anything like that. Do you have those notes? Is that something you think I should take a look at? And then I understand the child's in therapy, and I would like to visit that issue. And then there was some discussions about what kind of boundaries we could put around the court engaging in further investigation, if you will, or seeking further information to make an informed decision. And counsel, on behalf of his client, agreed that the record could be expanded, that Gail Rosenthal's notes could be viewed by the court, that therapy notes could be viewed by the court, and that certainly it was appropriate for the courts to spend some more time on the Fleming report. So what did the court do? Let us make our arguments in December. Said, I don't want to cut anything short. You got a lot of stuff to say. This is an important issue. You're going to come back. And we set another date. And when we come back, I'll have the benefit of having done these additional items. But I want to hear your arguments. So we came back. She filled us in on what those materials were. We made our arguments. She gave this, no district court order is perfect. We all know this. I don't know if I knew what a perfect order would look like if I saw it, especially in a child situation like this. But what she did was she gave the parties her best effort. She read the brief focused assessment, and what did she learn in the brief focused assessment? She learned that the child expressed a desire to attend school in Woodbury, but was cautious in making a specific statement, not wanting to hurt Dad's feelings, not wanting to make it seem like she's aligning with Mom, but she said some things that were told us that she was kind of beyond her years and she kind of understood this issue maybe better than the parties, maybe better than lawyers, maybe better than the court. She said that I have a really nice friend group in Woodbury. I miss those friends. She went to school the previous year in Woodbury. I miss those friends. She named the friends to Gail Rosenthal in this brief focused assessment. And then she said, I feel like I'm not quite being challenged here. I want to be challenged. She's a really, really high achiever, really smart, at the time, 12-year-old. The court considered these things. The court articulated this to the parties. The court articulated this to counsel at the hearing. The court articulated this in its order. The court told us I've had a chance to read the Fleming report.
So can I interrupt you for a minute?
Please.
So how do you respond to appellant's argument that the parties agreed that it was in the best interest of their child to attend the Burnsville school system throughout her education? And it certainly appears from the record that that's much more feasible for the father in order to get the kid there, et cetera, to the school based on where father lives and father's job requirements.
Yeah, I'll come to that point right now. So they had an equal parenting time schedule. So the detriment to both parties relative to getting the child to and from school is something that was shared and would be shared going forward. Whether the child was going to school in Burnsville, Mom would do the driving as the mom did the year before. Whether the child was going to school in Woodbury, Dad would do the driving, okay? Nothing about the schedule would change. Let me answer your question specifically now. And I think you know where I'm going with this answer because you asked counsel the very same question and then you laid out for him out of my brief in the record as to what's the nature of this agreement. There was no agreement. The agreement was for fifth grade only. So here's what I know when I see an agreement on school choice. He wants you to believe that this is forever. For the entire duration of the child's schooling. First of all, nothing in family law besides a waiver of spousal maintenance is forever. And things that we leave that are about the children, we always allow for modification based upon the best interest. Unless it's custody, then we've got the endangerment standard. So here, what don't we have first? We don't have a judgment decree before you that said this child will always go to school absent a future judicial determination that going to school in Burnsville is not in her best interest anymore. It's not here. If it was, you'd have it in front of you. Instead, we've got reliance, which the appellant has every time we've showed up at court. This is what he goes into. He says, this was an agreement, it lasts forever. And he cites this transcript. So I've spent some time to look at it, and the way I see it is, you walk away understanding there was an agreement for fifth grade, and that agreement for fifth grade might have put the issue of custody and parenting time to bed. But I don't see anything in this record that allows for us to read into it that it goes beyond the fifth grade. Let's look at it specifically.
I'd like to have you spend a little bit of time talking about sort of the merits of the district court's balancing of the best interest factors. Here's my concern. It's kind of the staleness of the information. I mean, the stability is a very important thing for this child. And the district court also seemed to focus on the child's stated preferences. And in that regard, I mean, we're looking at evidence from back in August, or statements made in August of 2020 by the child about her desire for a nice school and a locker and, you know, smaller classes, whatever the thing. I mean, to me, that almost seems more like she was ready for middle school as opposed to I want to be in a particular school. She was ready for a different kind of school experience. It seems to me the record could be read that way. And then we have no further documentation of her friend groups or how middle school has gone for her in Burnsville. And I'm concerned that the district court didn't have, in some ways, enough information to really assess the child's needs when it considered this motion just last year.
You probably don't ever have enough information, and could everybody have been better served with some kind of contested evidentiary hearing? Sure. But the statute didn't call for it. It was a standard motion hearing that everyone was allowed to proceed by affidavit. But She went beyond even what we provided her. She said, she had your concern, Your Honor, it seems to me. She went beyond that. She wanted more information, and that's why she said, let's make this decision really, really good and sound and get me this other information. The parties cooperated, allowed for that. Now, the difference, I think, is let's not lose track of where we were at that point in time in the pandemic. She wasn't attending school. She was homeschooling. And maybe then if she was attending school, maybe the court would have then said, hey, let's get an update. Maybe I appoint a guardian ad litem and get an update here. But this court felt that it had enough information in the record to make an informed decision relative to school choice, and it did, and it's a detailed order that went into a number of things. Think of how many times you see school choice issues where you don't even have the benefit of an expert. Here's what we had. We had an expert that went ahead and evaluated the two schools. That's not close academically. Evaluated the two schools then based upon ethnic qualities and the like and said, it's not close there either. And we have a child of mixed race here. Just every way you looked at the facts of the case, they aligned with the child, continuing with her education in Woodbury. And I hope I answered your question. I don't want to lose sight of the question I was asked over here, if it's okay to shift. And I'll do it briefly. So let's just look at that order on this court agreement issue. You have, okay.
Not to cut you off.
No, nope, you're in charge here.
So it seems like another overriding factor, whether it's the parent consultant reports or no matter what you look at, is that a problem for this child or what's causing the child stress is this ping-ponging back and forth and back and forth. So how do we weigh that into the district court's best interest?
It did and it didn't, because there was going to be a switch regardless because of the age of the child. She was going to be going into a middle school either in Woodbury or in Burnsville. And because...
Was the child already in middle school by the time the judge... Or sixth grade, I guess, wherever, if that's middle school or not, I don't know.
She was learning remotely at home.
Ah.
And she was receiving a sixth grade education, an instruction through a device such as a tablet and a computer, very different than brick and mortar, walking into a school and putting stuff into a locker that she envisioned she'd be doing as a sixth grader. We fall into that year where, I, quite frankly, her order might be, the judge's order would maybe be more challengeable if there was this delay, lack of update, and were normal circumstances. Here, because of the pandemic, the remote learning, the record that you have before you, it is certainly an order that you can confirm, affirm. And just let me just finish on this point, and I'm open to any questions that we have, and I say this with all due respect. Much of what appears before you every day in your role as appellate court judges, you have the ability to unring the bell of the district court. You can do that many, many times. This isn't that case. We now have a child that has been in school in Woodbury this entire year and not learning remotely, putting books in a locker, eating in a lunchroom with other children, and attending classes whereby she has developed relationships with teachers, staff members, and children. It's too late to unring this bell. Thank you.
Let me ask you this. One of father's concerns is that your client may move again. She was in Shoreview for a period of time, and I understand there was an error in the district court's findings of fact because at the time of this hearing before the district court, your client was actually in Woodbury again. But, I mean, what prevents this your client from moving again, and then there we are, lack of stability?
Well, we'd be speculating that she might move again, and the best evidence we have before us is that she's in Woodbury, she's been there for a significant period of time. He hasn't put forth anything to the court that would suggest to the district court to suggest she was intending to move again. And the law always accommodates. These are never final issues. If she did move again, that would maybe require a school move, then the district court can step back in with continuing jurisdiction to analyze these issues. And then he's in a position to say, listen, maybe we have to do something now relative to her parenting time schedule because she's going to come to Burnsville and It's an issue that's analyzed differently than this one was, and we would be speculating to decide what she may or may not do in the future. What we know right now is that she's living in Woodbury. We know that she's been living there for a significant period of time, and we know this child is thriving, and she is wonderfully talented and brilliant and successful, and she has two loving parents that just can't come to agreement over a school issue that a court had to decide for them that now this child's benefiting from. That's what we know. Thank you. Any other questions?
I don't see any.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Lofstrom, you will have the last word.
Your Honor, if the trial court properly handled this case and ruled that the PC did not abuse her discretion, we would have continuity. The child started out in Burnsville the first 3 years, went to a school out in Shoreview, and then when Ms. T moved to Woodbury, one year in Woodbury, and then because of the agreement that was in the best interest of the child, the child was in school for the last 2 years in Burnsville. 5 out of the 7 years of her education were spent in Burnsville, primarily because of the agreement. One of the reasons that, one of the basis of the custody evaluations report or recommendation, a favorable report, is my client, Mr. Garza, had a home, owned a home in Burnsville. The child had gone to Burnsville for all these years, and there's continuity and stability in that. Whereas Ms. T is living with her live-in boyfriend who owns the house. There's not as much continuity and stability there. Let me point out a couple of other things. Mr. McGraw talks about, well, if the trial court is reversed, then what are we going to do? The child goes back to Burnsville? Well, certainly not this year. And it's not fair. In my opinion, the trial court presented Mr. Garza with a fait accompli. What are you going to do about it now? If you note in the record that I made a motion to stay in front of the judge, and I was put off. And finally, I made a motion to the appellate court, even though I didn't get a decision from the trial court, and they said, well, we can't make a decision because the trial court didn't make a decision, but we have some concerns as to how Ms. Viola was handling the matter. We get her decision October 25, 2 months after the child started school. That's a fait accompli. What are you going to do about it now? The Fleming report. Woodbury's a better school district than Burnsville. Well, he was a hired gun. You know what he's going to say. Besides that, a critical review is that's not relevant. Ms. T already decided that, well, the Woodbury school is better, but in the interest of the child, I agree the child should go to school in Burnsville. Regarding the permanency of the agreement, whether it was permanent or temporary, the trial court says the PC interpreted this section because it appears to this court she took this section to mean the decision was permanent. The court, Judge Viola, finds that the terms relating to school choice was a temporary agreement, and the parties only intended for the child to attend school in Burnsville for the upcoming school year. I just don't understand that type of logic. And there's also evidence to that fact, if I can find it here. Okay, yes, page 6, line 9 of the parties' June 17, 2019 agreement, read into the record on that date. It says, page 6, line 9, part of this agreement is based upon the expectation that Ms. Teal will relocate from her residence in Burnsville to a home in or near the Burnsville School District. In fact, they had that home on the market in Woodbury, and then withdrew it because Ms. T was thinking about that second bite at the apple. There's no question that the decision was based upon the child continuing school in the Burnsville School District. No question about that at all. There was a number of points that we made in our brief about the failure of the trial court's findings in particular. A lot of them just didn't make any sense. I'm sorry, they just didn't make any sense. But I wanted to point out one in particular. If I can find that. I'm sorry. I know I'm wasting my time and the court's time. Let me leave it at this, Your Honor. Again, it's unfair for this court to make a decision whether to affirm simply because the trial court presented us with a fait accompli. I know what I was going to say, and I'll do it quickly. The judge in her October 25 decision denying our stay stated that the future schooling is subject to even more disturbance due to petitioner's appeal and motion to stay the court's May 12 decision. Petitioner does not consider the level of emotional and social harm that would be inflicted on the child if she was returning immediately changed to Burnsville. In other words, if she in October 25 decided, we should stay this thing, that means the child would have to go back to Burnsville after spending 2 months in Woodbury, and then if the appellate court affirmed her decision, then the child would have to go back. That's a classic fait accompli. And she uses it in her decision to support her findings, to support her decision.
All right, counsel, you've made this point. Your time has expired.
All right.
I thank you both for your arguments today. We will take the matter under advisement and issue our decision within the statutory 90-day period.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
That is the last case on our calendar for oral arguments, so we will recess.